Broadcasting live from the Roswell Infinity Studio, located inside Digital Ignition, where North Atlanta startups take off. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. We are broadcasting live from our studio inside Digital Ignition, and we've got two great guests, Carla Brandau with the Workplace Power Institute, and John Roman. And John is with Transworld Business Advisors of Atlanta North. But before we get to our guest, yes, we are in Digital Ignition, and Digital Ignition is the ultimate place for entrepreneurs to work, innovate, learn, establish, and grow their companies. Nestled within a 45,000-square-foot building is an open floor plan with co-working office space, dedicated desk, private offices, meeting rooms, event space, a classroom, and a fantastic break room with outdoor patio and all the fresh ground coffee you can drink. What more do you need? If you want great co-working as well as space which impresses investors, customers, and future employees, visit digitalignition.com. Now we turn to Carla Brandau, and Carla is with Workplace Power Institute. Hi, Carla.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Glad to have you. So tell us about you. Tell us about the Workplace Power Institute.
Workplace Power Institute is a management consulting firm, and I am a teacher or an educator, you might say, by trade. I have a Bachelor of Arts in Education, and I decided to take my passion for teaching into the training industry. So I started my own business, and I love to watch people have aha moments when we're talking. I love to see them discuss the concepts that I'm bringing to them, and I love to see change in their lives.
Oh, wow, I feel an aha moment coming on, right?
good.
Yeah. So you've got a book.
Yes.
And let's do a shameless plug for your book. I'll do the shameless plug.
Okay.
How to Earn the Gift of Discretionary Effort, which I've already looked up. It's on Amazon. It's available for folks that are interested. So what's discretionary effort? It begs the question, right?
Yeah, it begs the question. It also begs, how do you say it? Because
sure.
Because people, when I first started working with the concept, it's like discretionary effort. What is that? Discretionary effort. And then I had a hard time saying it. And so I understand that that may be tough for people. But it's an absolutely great concept, because what we're talking about here is that people in your organization will work, you might say, to get a paycheck. Okay, discretionary effort is what they're capable of giving to you. So there's a big difference between just doing enough to get your paycheck and not get fired and actually contributing to what's happening in the company. And that's what we say is discretionary effort, is getting them to give you what they're capable of bringing. And most employees are capable of giving you much, much more than they may be right now.
So it's what we think we're getting when we hire folks, but not necessarily what we get after they get on the job for a while, right?
Oh, that's so true. And why we call it the gift is because there's a lot of management. And management, by the way, is a really tough job. By the time you get into the different employees and their different personalities and what's happening to them, and it's very, very difficult. And I have found that a lot of people don't understand the concept of discretionary effort. They talk about it, but they don't really understand it. For instance, I heard a manager say, to another manager, you could get her to give you discretionary effort. Just tell her that if she stays late tonight and finishes that report for you, she can have Friday afternoon off. And I go, that's not really discretionary effort. You know, because it's a quid pro quo situation.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm getting what I want, the report.
Right.
She's getting what she really wants, the afternoon off.
So how does this differ from is it different from an engagement program, employee engagement? We hear that term all the time.
There is an element of employee engagement in discretionary effort, absolutely. But it's not a program. A program, and I think we've all been there, you know, you do X amount of work, you'd bring this amount in to the company or whatever they have set the parameters for. And at that point, then most of the time you got a catalog, right?
Right.
And you got to pick a ping pong table, or you got to pick a set of pearls, or sometimes even a coffee pot, who knows. But so that's a program that people try to implement. In fact, I knew one company that had a whole department, a whole team that just focused on engagement. Now, they were a fast food business, and their engagement wasn't for the fast food restaurants. It was just to engage the workers in the corporate atmosphere. It's like, huh, I'm not sure that that's exactly what you need, a whole department that's going to just engage employees.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and what the example you mentioned is more bargaining. I mean, it's
right.
It's really bargaining instead of employees that are motivated to give effort above the minimal baseline.
That's exactly right. And sometimes they will call it going the extra mile. And that's an element too, but going the extra mile is usually thought of as going the extra mile is usually physical, like, okay, I'm going to stay late tonight. I know that we need this done. It's like, okay, I will come in early tomorrow morning, or I will stay late on, you know, I'll come in on Saturday, whatever you need to do to go to the second mile. But people who give you discretionary effort are giving you mind share.
Right.
You know, they're not just complying with what you want. They're going ahead and they're committing. They're committing to the values, the goals, the mission of the organization. And they work with what I like to call the producer's mindset. Now,
say more on that. Yeah.
Yeah, producer's mindset. Well, I've done a lot of time management work in my career. And when the phrase producer's mindset came to me, I knew what it meant. In fact, by the way, I was a little girl in the seventh grade that had the to-do list stamped on my forehead.
Ah, one of those, huh?
Yeah, one of those.
Okay.
Of those. And so the producer's mindset means to me that when an employee comes into work, they know what they're going to do for the day, which means they've closed out their day or they've set their goals for this day. And they're not just going to be busy, because we can be busy all day long.
Sure.
They're going to be trying to help you advance the goals of your organization. That's what I mean by the producer's mindset. And they're going to help you be creative. They're going to look at problems that are coming up, and instead of just saying, well, that's not my job, you know, that's not my problem, they'll help you innovate and help you find creative ways to do things. That's what it means to me. Now, when you engage your employees, I have a good example for you, because who knows what they're capable of bringing to you if you give them the assignment, give them the responsibility, make them accountable, give them space to make some errors, and give them deadlines, you know, and make them accountable to that. Who knows what they're capable of? And a good example is when I was doing work for Fort Benning. And the head of the Army Research Institute had lunch with me. His name was Seward Smith. And he said, Carla, you should see what happens to these young people when I bring them in, sit them down, describe a project to them, and I say, are you interested in this? And they say yes. Then he says, if it flies, I'll give you the credit. If it flops, I'll take the rap.
Oh, boy.
Can you see what happens?
Sure.
How much discretionary effort are they going to give? And so, in my mind, those are some of the parameters that need to happen when you want to move people from just doing enough where they don't get fired to what they're capable of contributing to your organization.
We're speaking with Carla Brandau, and Carla is the CEO of Workplace Power Institute. So I'm curious about, you mentioned one example, a model of fostering discretionary effort with your gentleman at Fort Benning, but talk in more general terms about how a manager can foster this environment among their team, among their employees.
It kind of goes to the model that we have, that we teach when we come in and do programs in the companies. And the model starts with integrity. And, you know, we researched, when we wrote this book, we researched a lot of companies. And I was amazed that about 95% of the companies at the base of their values had integrity. So you have to have a firm integrity base with them. And another thing, as you kind of move up our model, is that they have to feel safe, okay? So this is kind of a physical thing, but they have to feel safe when they come to your building. They want to go home in the same condition that they arrived in the morning. And so that's why you have safety issues and security and all of that. But then you move into psychological safety, and this is a big issue, because if the people feel, excuse me, if the people feel psychologically safe to surface the truth, you know, to be able to tell you what they really think, to be involved in the discussions, then they start to feel this in group. Because when people feel like they're in group, then they're going to naturally give you more of their thought processes and more of their ideas. And the next step, you might say, is that they need to feel socially accepted in your group. As I said, make them feel like they're part of the in group. And what I tell managers is that when you have this new hire, everybody has strengths and limitations, do they not?
Sure.
We hire on the strengths, right?
Right.
That's what we're looking for on their resume, all
those
strengths. But then the limitations, you don't really see them. So what they come out. We all have them. And so what I tell people is that you want to accept them as is. Now, have you ever needed a new appliance and you go to the scratch and dent section of the store?
Yes.
Have you ever done that?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you need a new washer and you go, well, there's a dent on that side, but you know, it's going to be against the wall. So you buy that washer and you get good value for your money. And it's the same way with your employees. If you accept them as is and then help them grow, help them flourish with the strengths that they have or those gifts that they have, if you can help that, then you're going to get great value for the money that you put into their salary.
We're speaking with Carla Brandau, and Carla is the CEO of the Workplace Power Institute. Now, you write and speak about charismatic leadership. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, I can hear folks just rolling their eyes saying, I'm not charismatic, so how am I going to do that? Maybe you can start by defining what charismatic leadership is for you.
Oh, that is an absolutely fabulous topic. And I was doing a personality class in a company, and at the end of the class, everyone kind of wandered out, and this one young lady looked at me, and she says, Carla, how do you get charisma? And it's like, whoa. And so I've thought about that for many years. And charisma is, in the first term, is a lot of social ability. Okay, so someone who has a lot of charisma, when you meet them, they will probably have a firm handshake. They will look you right in the eye. They will smile at you. They will make you feel like you're the most important person in the world. That's part of charisma. So a charismatic leader, though, is someone that people like, and they will choose to follow them, not have to follow them, because they are the boss or because they are the manager. So charisma comes in a lot of forms. And by the way, if you want to increase some of the social skills that you have, it's easy to learn, because you can practice looking people in the eye and smiling. And you can practice that, and once you've learned that, you can take it everywhere with you. Another little component of that charisma that really fits into leadership is you have to care about the people. You have to really care about them. In fact, if there's one thing that you could do, just one thing, and I've written an article on LinkedIn about this, if there's just one thing that you can do to engage your employees, it's, of course, the long answer is in the book, but the short answer is that you need to love them. And it's not the passionate, romantic love. No, this is the love where I care about who you are. I am grateful for what you bring to this organization. I'm concerned about things that might be a problem in your life. I'm concerned about your well-being. And when they feel that, then they're going to be more loyal to you.
And something tells me you're about to tell us. I'm racing ahead, that actions speak louder than words in that regard, right?
Oh, yes, they do. And a charismatic leader has, well, we mentioned the social skills, right?
Sure.
But a charismatic leader, some people have the social skills naturally. If you've studied the personalities, you know that. Other personalities are just firm in their resolve, and they're just determined to do. And they are charismatic leaders just because of the force of their personality. And then another type of the charisma people have is that they have all the facts. I mean, people follow them because they know what they're doing. And then another type of person, I call them the oak trees because they're just firm and steady. And people can trust them and trust their integrity. So those are all little issues about charisma. But another thing about charisma is that you have to be optimistic. You have to believe in where you're going and what you're going to do. And one of the phrases that we use in our training is, I have everything I need. Okay, now just stop and think about that a minute. Do you have everything you need all the time?
Not really.
Right. So right? It doesn't mean that I have everything I need for the future or everything I'm ever going to want.
Sure.
But it means that when I have a critical situation, I've built this relationship with my employees, I can look at them and see what the gifts they have. And I can say, I have everything I need right now. We have everything we need as a team.
Right.
Let's decide how we can go forward and solve this. Mm-hmm. And that's when you start to get tons of discretionary effort from your people. Because they have gifts of life experience. They have gifts of other organizations they've been in. They have gifts of being in associations, going to conventions. They have all this knowledge. And if you can help them apply it to this situation, then you can really say we have everything we need to succeed.
Good stuff. Carla Brandau. Carla is the CEO of the Workplace Power Institute. Carla, we could talk for a while, but we better wrap it up and let people know how to get in touch with you if they'd like to know more.
They can go to carlabrando.com or they can go to earnthegift.com. And by the way, on earnthegift.com/app, there's a little app there where they can put in how many employees they have, what percentage of disengagement they think they're in, and they can calculate how much money they're losing per month based on disengagement. And if we can turn some of those around with our discretionary effort leadership, they'll be having more on their bottom line and more profit margins.
Wow. Sounds great. So, Carla, also want to mention your book, How to Earn the Gift of Discretionary Effort, by Carla Brandau and Douglas Ross. Carla, this is a nice gift. Thanks for the homework you gave me.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Again, Carla Brandau with the Workplace Power Institute. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Folks, I want to remind you that if you need help curing some other headaches, like administrative tasks or bookkeeping or marketing presentations, well, there's an answer for that, too. Go engage a smart and reliable Office Angel. Not a temp agency or placement firm, Office Angels matches your business support needs with angels who have the talent and experience necessary to help you maintain and grow your business on an ongoing or as-needed basis. Your terms, your timeline. They lend a hand when needed, and they fly off when the job is done. Find out more at officeangels.us or call Chief Executive Angel SES Gabito at 770-442-9246. We turn now to John Roman, and John is the owner of Transworld Business Advisors of Atlanta North. John, welcome.
Thanks, John. Thanks for inviting me.
Glad to have you here. So tell us more about you. Tell us more about Transworld Business Advisors.
Thanks. I came here back in 1997, right after graduating Institute of Economics back in Romania. And that year coincided with me opening my first business, so right off the boat. Came here, and that's the expression. Opened my first business, and I just liked it. My mom gave me a lot of influence on being a business owner and being an entrepreneur. And when I opened my first one, it was a great experience. Of course, didn't have any knowledge. So furthermore, I opened several other businesses while I was doing my 16 years career in commercial and SBA lending, and I just enjoyed it. 2014, I decided to get off the corporate America and starting my own starting this Transworld Business Advisors Atlanta North office and help people selling their businesses in the right way.
So you're a business advisor, business broker. I don't know how you want to term that, but you help basically entrepreneurs buy and sell businesses.
Correct. So 90% of what we do and services we provide have to do with selling the business. We do businesses with revenues from zero. We've sold a couple of businesses that just had patents.
Really?
Absolutely. And those are the fun ones to work with.
That doesn't sound like fun to me when you don't have a lot to work with, John.
Your listeners didn't see my my fingers going up.
But right.
I do have, and I want to touch on that as well because I'm blessed to have a great group of people and very experienced, and each one of them dealing with different type of businesses. And, you know, we handle patents as well, trademarks with businesses, revenue up to $20 million. Whatever passes that mark, it goes to the corporate. And they have a great M&A department handling businesses up to $50, $60 million in revenue.
Oh, wow. So you've got quite a range there of businesses you can work with.
Absolutely.
So talk a little bit about, you know, there are a lot of business brokerages out there, a lot of M&A advisory firms, however you want to term the specialty. What makes you different from the competition?
Well, first of all, Transworld is the largest business brokerage in the world. We have 500 brokers and 200 offices. And the friendship we have amongst us, camaraderie, it really helps us. So what that means is we're giving business to each other. Let's say we have someone coming from New York all the way to Atlanta, and they want to sell their business there and buy a business here. The person in New York is calling us and just introducing us to the business owner, and we will help them here. Same thing here with Atlanta being such a big hub. We have a lot of people traveling through the airport, and they just get on the internet, and you know they think about selling their business back home. So they get us, and then we refer them to whoever is in their local market to help them selling their business. So that really helps. Another thing is the huge support we're getting from the franchise, from the leadership. Andy Cognita is always looking, our CEO is always looking for innovative ways to just not to only, you know, show us to the world, but also to help our clients as well. You know, we're just recently starting a podcast where we're helping people, you know, learning more about the process of selling or buying a business. Additionally, we are on Sirius XM, we are in CNBC, so because we really want to be seen. We want to show our clients that we do use every method to advertise their businesses and sell them at a faster time.
We're speaking with John Roman, and John is the owner of Transworld Business Advisors of Atlanta North or Atlanta Perimeter. You're basically in that North Atlanta area.
Correct. North of Buckhead all the way to Roswell, city of Roswell.
Good stuff. So talk about how business owners need to prepare their business for sale. What do they need to do?
That's a great question, John, because unfortunately we don't see a lot of it. And that's
a lot of preparation.
A lot of preparation.
But they expect to get a big price, right?
Yeah, premium.
Yeah, of course.
Price.
Right.
And that's the first thing we brought in and to interview, trying to figure out how prepared they are. And unfortunately, we don't see that a lot. Preparation of the business could be anything from delegating activities and tasks to your employees so you don't have to be in the office at any given time, all the way to keeping transparent books. You know, financials are very important in selling a business, and unfortunately not everybody knows that. Having you know, key employees taking care of the activities and tasks in our business, very important. The buyers are attracted to those kind of businesses. And they want to see that, you know, they're not going to spend 90 hours of week in that business, but they're also going to have some discretionary time to devote to their families. What I also suggest is, you know, just make a plan. Whenever you want to sell your business, plan it out at least 3 years. Get a broker opinion value or certified business valuation. Talk to someone who knows this business. They can give you a value and also ask the question, how can I get more for my business? What do I need to follow? And I'm pretty sure everyone in my position will give you at least 3 hints on what you need to do to get the premium for your business.
So what I'm hearing from you here, John, is that you really need to be thinking about this years ahead of time. so you can plan for this and know what to do and make fixes as you need to over that period of time, as opposed to walking in the door and saying, I'm looking for to sell my business in 3 months, right?
Absolutely, at the top price.
Right, right.
Yes, preparation truly helps. It's not just you preparing your business to be sold at the top market price, but also puts you on that stage that you already know that your business will be sold and you're starting planning after the sale, what are you going to do? You know, because we have people that we worked with and helped them to sell their business at a very good price. And then there was the question, how am I going to pay the capital gains? What am I going to do with the money going forward? What am I going to live on? I mean, all those questions should be actually put before the closing, not after. Because,
right.
You know, you got to have a financial advisor. You got to have a CPA to work with you during that preparation stage in order for you to get the full benefit.
Sure. We're speaking with John Roman, and John is the owner of Transworld Business Advisors of Atlanta North. John, how do you value a business?
Well, we have access to several databases, and we go in there and see the businesses that are for sale or they have been sold, different stages, different price ranges. We also assessing, and this is, you know, kind of I want to kill the myth here because a lot of people are coming to us saying, hey, I want four times more. There's not such a thing like four times more, not always. I mean, it could be businesses sold for four times more, but it really depends on a lot of soft factors. They have to do, you know, first of all, industry trend, depending on what type of business it is. Look at the retail, right? 20
sure.
years ago, it was a great business to get in. Now, you know, Amazon is really killing most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing we're looking at is employee turnover. How fast are your employees, you know, quitting on you? And is what is wrong there? How many hours are you putting in the business? As a business owner, you know, if you're already putting 90 to 100 hour a week, you're not an owner. You're really a, you know, self-operator, self-employed with a job. So
sure.
you're not truly selling a business. You're selling your job.
Right.
And we're looking at all this. Revenue trends, very important as well because, again, we have some industries that are really going down. And if you want to price it back on what you've done back in 2015, it's going to be hard. It's going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible. Attractiveness on the marketplace. You know, we're dealing with buyers. We on average have 80 to 100 buyers coming to our office, different sources every week. And we know what they want because we're talking to them. And we know how attractive a business is right when we have the interview with the seller. And all those factors are going in and valuing a business and putting the market on the right price.
So lots of soft factors, not a hard-nosed bottom line answer to that question.
Correct.
Therefore, you need to talk to an expert like you. Let me make sure I understand. Do you represent buyers of businesses as well as sellers?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
So if I'm a buyer, what do I need to look for when I'm looking for a potential business to buy? What are the considerations that you advise your clients on?
That's a great question. It's pretty much the most important thing. If I were to be a buyer, I would assess all my skills, my hobbies, tasks, things that I kind of like to do, things I'm good at, and trying to see businesses that kind of matches, either the skills or the hobbies, and go in that direction more than just the numbers alone. There are three type of buyers. You know, they are the first-time buyer who's tired of the corporate America and they want to move into business ownership. They are the serial buyers or the flippers, people that are buying businesses constantly and they're selling them for a profit or they hold them as a portfolio. And also they're the strategic buyers, people that are looking to acquire businesses that so they can grow. So each type of buyer is looking for different things. As a first-time buyer, I would say the most important thing, again, it has to line up with your skills and at least hobbies, experience, has everything to do with it. You got to trust yourself that you can operate that business. And also another thing is you got to keep the same work ethic that you had in your job. You'll be surprised, but there are a lot of people coming from the corporate America and business ownership, and they're thinking now they're business owners and they can work 20 hours a week. It's not going that way.
Oh, come on. You mean I can't just light up a cigar and put my feet up on the desk and let it ride?
Definitely not.
Okay.
So I would suggest everyone, and you know, looking to buy a business, to plan at least for 6 months, not a full time, but overtime time schedule, where they need to be there to understand their staff, they understand the operation, to understand their clients. Things to look for: obviously, you don't want your business to be concentrated on a way or another. You don't want to have business just with three clients, which, you know, count for 100% of the business, as well as you don't want to have a vendor who quantifies for 80% of what you're buying as far as a product line.
Something tells me you also don't want to buy the old Roach Motel, right? That it's easy to get in, but it's hard to sell later, right? I mean, you want to really look ahead.
Absolutely.
To a point where you want to sell that business, because that's where the ultimate payday comes, right?
And that's another thing we're telling people is you buy a business with an end game in mind. What are you going to do with it? Unfortunately, what we see on the marketplace, there are not a lot of children that are taking their parents' businesses. So I would say, you know, if I buy a business and I'm 40 years old, I would think, okay, how many years would I hold into this business? What can I do to make that business grow? Kind of an end game, and starting planning, selling your business from the day you bought it, although you're thinking back in mind that you're going to hold it for 20 years. You know, unfortunately, we don't see a lot of 20-year businesses that are being bought to be held for 20 years.
Sure.
A lot of businesses are buying, you know, short term. They are in it for 7-10 years, and then they're selling it out.
So one question I know you get all the time for folks that are looking to buy a business, independent business or franchise, what advice do you give there?
Depends on the background. If you like to be into a system that you follow directions and you don't have to worry about what you're going to do to get more business in or to hire people, and the model is there for you, I'll suggest a franchise. Another good thing about the franchise is the fact that, you know, you can have your own location. So if you want something to be close to home, then obviously you can open a franchise even in few yards, 100 yards from your house. On the established businesses, obviously you get the privilege to see a trend, and you see how the trend is. Obviously you're going to go to the historical financials, see if the business is profitable or not, and you'll go to extended due diligence where you can find out. So really depends on the person. Again, it goes back to assessing your skills. If you are a self-entrepreneur or self-promoter or entrepreneur in mind, I would say go for the establishing your own business, because a lot of entrepreneurs don't really do well with someone being on top of them, telling them how to do it. They want to be free. But when it comes to, you know, being profitable and you can see a trend, then I would say the franchise is better, because they have a system in place that you can follow and grow your business.
Good advice from John Roman. And John is the owner of Transworld Business Advisors of Atlanta North. So, John, for those that want to be in touch, those that want millions for their business in the next 30 minutes, I'm just kidding. We know they need to plan, right, to sell their business.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So those that want some advice on that, how do they be in touch?
Our website is www.tworld.com/Atlanta North. They also can call our office, 404-666-4486, or they can reach me on my email, jroman@tworld.com.
Great. John, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, John.
Folks, I want to remind you that we have a great archive of shows out there that have over 300 guests of all disciplines, different areas of expertise, just like Carla and John here. So go to our website, northfulton.businessradiox.com. Enjoy those interviews and search for those industries, topics that you have an interest in. Lots of great work out there that we've done out of this studio and across the Business Radio X platform. We've done over 35,000 interviews with business leaders over 10 years. We are the voice of, my buddy Stone and Lee say in corporate, we are the voice of the Fortune 500,000. So we tell the stories of businesses that wouldn't ordinarily get to hear their voice heard. So check us out on our website. I want to thank again Carla Brandau. Carla is the CEO of Workplace Power Institute, and John Roman, owner of Transworld Business Advisors of Atlanta North. I'm John Ray, your host, easy for me to say. Join us next time on another edition of North Fulton Business Radio.